This is a podcast that seeks justice. Justice for the lives stolen by those in society that hide amongst us every day. Hidden in our towns, cities, and countrysides, the places that we work, and sometimes in our very own homes. This is Hidden Killers.
Welcome to the podcast. I am Tony Bruschi. Be sure to follow us wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our breaking updates and the stories that we're following for you and our discussions as well. We're having one of those right now with Mark Pucci. He is a retired New York City Police Department detective and founder of the National Institute for Law and Justice. Mark, let's talk Alec Murdaugh. Lots of evidence coming out, some forensic, some circumstantial, both seemingly fitting together in the puzzle, yes, as most would see it to be. Talk to me about the evidence that you've seen so far that is strong enough to convict, and what pieces that you've seen thus far that don't seem to hold as much weight as maybe some think.
Yeah. So, you know, again, there's always the, you know, the confluence of, you know, what you're trying to put together, you know, as an investigator, and now at this stage as a prosecutor, you know, the reason behind, what's the motive, you know, what could possibly, you know, motivate a father to kill his son and his wife, you know, where there wasn't any apparent, you know, dismay to reach that level that was publicly known prior to this. You know, and of course, you know, a lot of the synopsis, you know, and being put out there are to cover up, you know, this, I believe it was a $762,000,
something like that.
You know, divergence of, you know, funds, you know, to a similar sounding, you know, company's account.
Yeah.
And I just if I take 2 seconds, just comment on that, you know, the amount of, with the testimony coming out now, you know, with the, I guess it's the paralegal saying that, you know, Alex Murtz was continually correcting her on, she was putting the correct company's name and he kept correcting her and telling her to just put the abridged name, which was his fictitious company. And then actually when she did that, the accounts payable or, you know, the accounting department would still print the check incorrectly. And then he would have to, you know, that's just another case of, you know, probably someone who, you know, he feels that, you know, he's above or, you know, superior, and just not realizing all of those, you know, giant breadcrumbs that when and if this ever comes to light, that all these people are going to independently, you know, converge with the same exact, you know, story as where he's correcting them to fill the checks out incorrectly, you know?
Very much so. Like he's in this world, it seemed, of I will never be caught and this is just how I'm going to do things. And I guess somewhat understandably so when you're brought up in that world as well, it's a level of conditioning.
Yes. Yes. It's, it seems like he didn't know any other way, and he just assumed that, you know, this would, you know, continue in perpetuity, you know, and not ever end, and he would just be, you know, Teflon or, you know, bulletproof, so to speak. What I think is very interesting, and again, you know, the convergence of modern technology, with I believe the FBI agent who testified yesterday, Dwight Falsikoff, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, where he was talking about both the data in the Chevy Suburban, which he was able to analyze. I believe it was the call logs and the contacts, you know, as they show in the vehicle.
Sure.
And he was able to determine that that vehicle from 9:06 p.m. to 10:13 p.m. was put in and out of park 8 times. And again, on its own, you know, not sure because he's not, you know, testifying as to where it was going. But then I feel when you dig into, so you have, was it Paul's cell phone with the video, which they're so far they're saying that they can't 100% identify the voice, but there is a secondary individual, Ronnie Crosby, who is a former partner and a friend, who is also, I guess, stating that he does feel that the voice that he hears on Paul, on the video on Paul's phone, which was recorded at 8:44 p.m., where they feel that it was recorded in the kennel area. Mm-hmm. And Ronnie Crosby is stating that he believes, you know, that he recognizes that as Alex's phone, Alex's voice.
Exactly. And there is no fear in anyone. If there's this third mysterious person that's there that sounds like Alec Murdaugh, being identified by his best friend, being identified by many other sources as his voice. It's not like there's just some random person that's showing up with guns ready to knock them down. But it certainly places Alec at the crime scene where he had already stated he was not.
Exactly. Stating that he had fallen asleep on the couch after having dinner with the, both of them, traveled to his parents' house to visit his mother. And then I felt the other curious part was the analysis of, you know, again, everyone always forgets that, you know, it's not just when you make a phone call, you know, I mean, as in the Koberger case, he was smart enough to turn his phone off on the night of the killings. But during the 2 or 3 weeks where he was stalking, it was on. Right. So in this case, similar, it's Maggie's phone. I think he quotes, he says at 8:49, the text message was read on her phone. Then the phone went to landscape mode while it was still locked. So that's somebody holding it, but the screen isn't even illuminated, but the phone is recording how it's being held, right? Yep. Then the phone display turns on at 8:53 and it goes back to portrait mode. Then the phone records 59 steps. Another thing that no one realizes when you're walking around, I mean, if whether or not she's using any of the health apps or, you know, or anything that might link to outside devices, the phone recorded that it traveled 59 steps. Mm-hmm. And then this display went off and came back on 4 seconds later. And then he's saying that Siri was activated. Then at 8:54, the phone display goes off. The camera's activated while it's still locked. And then the phone display changes to landscape mode again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just demonstrating with all the times, and this is during the time it's crossing over, you know, from 8:44, where, as you had said, you know, people are identifying independently. That's, you know, I've known Alex for X number of years, and I would say that that's his voice. Mm-hmm. So he's literally on the scene at that time.
As a former detective, what did you see in the video interrogation of Alex Murdaugh that was done right? And was there anything in there that you felt was not handled correctly from the standpoint of a detective with him in the car that night?
You know, so it's, and again, you know, never want to play Monday morning quarterback. It's anytime you're interviewing a subject, and, you know, it's soon after an incident. And, you know, you may have your initial suspicions, you know, your gut feelings, the hair on the back of your neck standing up, but you're not sure. It's such a fluid, you know, kind of, you know, interaction and conversation that it's really hard to say. And a lot of times also, you're listening, but you're formulating your next question. Mm-hmm. So you might only be, you know, half listening, and then upon review, you want to revisit. So what I would say is when you're doing an interview like that under those circumstances, what you're creating is a baseline of, you know, what is this individual going to say with the general information that we may have. You know, and in certain situations, you may have more specific information, and you're really looking to create a cyclical, you know, series of questions where you might ask the same questions, you know, a minimum of like three times, phrasing them differently in order to see where if this individual is lying, then you know, they're not going to end up being, you know, congruent with each other. There's going to be variations that will, you know, kind of tip you off that he's making it up. He's not, you know, he's not able to lie exactly the same way each time.
Sure.
You know, so it's, again, it's, you know, it's hard to say, you know, right or wrong, you know, in the fluidity of, you know, that short period after what's happened. You're more or less creating a baseline to go back to, you know, because that you're also assuming that, you know, unless this person is, you know, just the, you know, the best, you know, sociopathic, you know, Academy Award level winning actor, you know, their, you know, blood pressure went up, you know, their adrenaline was, you know, a little bit exhausted. So they're not going to be on, you know, 100% of the top of their game either. So this baseline interview allows you to create, you know, a recording where you can go back and you can see where the inconsistencies are. Mm-hmm. But it's in an official capacity. So you can go back and challenge and say, hey, when we first talked on that night in the car and, you know, you said this, but, you know, since then you've said these three other things, you mm-hmm. know, and then you can create where you're, you know, cornering and boxing in.
When you're in that sort of situation at that moment in time, are you trying to discern whether this person is responsible at that moment, or is it just, let me get a bunch of questions out, let me get a bunch of things on tape, and then we can go back and make our some judgments or make some decisions on what we want to push and pull on, and just get it all on the record as quickly as possible and not push a person into a corner of like, well, that's an inconsistency, because that may then make them close up and not talk as much?
So again, you know, every situation is unique in an, you know, in and of itself. So, depending on what you know going in, would be the first criteria. Obviously the reaction that you're getting, you know, you're also reading cues in, you know, what's the demeanor, what's, you know, is a person excessively, you know, upset? Mm-hmm. Do they seem, you know, almost, you know, unaffected? Are they complacent? You know, so you're looking at, you know, behavioral, you know, and even body cues, mm-hmm. which through the years you pick up, and some like me study because yeah. it's such an effective tool, you know, to understand, especially involuntary body movements, you know, eyebrow movements, sure. You know, pupils of the eyes, excessive blinking, you know, touching of the face, gnashing of the hands. You know, there's so many, you know, so many different, you know, say subconscious involuntary, you know, cues. And again, by themselves, not 100%, but, you know, in conjunction, you know, or, you know, like in sequence together, mm-hmm. You know, you can kind of understand a little bit, and then you can tailor, let's say, your tone, or the timbre of your interview. If you see that somebody, you know, is, you know, kind of maybe even collapsing a little bit, or they're starting to fear, that you know more than, you know, than they thought you would know, then of course you would shift the interview. You know, I don't think there's any reason that you would ever, you know, tailor an interview to deliberately do something later on, you know, but you go with the flow. And then, I think a point that you brought up is very important. You know, you want to try to keep the person talking, and you don't want to, you know, aggressively or, you know, like in a, you know, haphazard fashion, cause them to say, you know what, I don't want to talk to you anymore. You know, I want an attorney. You know, ideally you want to have a, you know, like a conversational interaction, at least at first, while you're gathering information and you're not 100% sure of what you're dealing with, as far as all the facts in the infancy of the investigation.
That wraps up our discussion with Mark Pucci. Thank you so much for your insight into the case today. He's a retired New York City Police Department detective and founder and CEO of the National Institute for Law and Justice. Great appreciation to him for spending some time with us today. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our discussions, breaking updates, and coverage of the cases that we are following for you right now. You can even get a commercial-free experience through Apple Podcasts and try that out for 3 days free. Until next time, for all of us here, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.